I was born in 1951. So that meant that at the time I turned 20 or 21, I was, at that time, the Vietnam War was on, and all 20-year-olds were eligible for conscription. So my generation at that time were all necessarily political, whether we liked it or not, and we had to choose whether we resisted conscription, as some did. There were draft resistors who would be hiding out and speaking in public. There were also the year before that, 1970 was the first year of moratoriums. So moratoriums were to put an end to, in this case, Australia's participation in the Vietnam War. I remember going on the first, the second, and the third moratoriums. The first one had 100,000 people in it in Melbourne. It was a huge event. I've, as with many of my generation, we kind of came of age at a time of social, political ferment and had to take positions. So over the years, that kind of response to matters and the feeling that one can actively engage has been something that's continued right up to this day. It's to bring it up to the present. I live in central Victoria, and I'm part of a small group who've been protesting on behalf of refugees for over 4 years. Every Friday evening from 5 till 5:30, a small group of us hold banners and so forth, with toot signs, and we now are well recognised and get quite an orchestra of toots. It's a way of asking others to either engage with the topic or not. So the protest room has four references to different protests. There's a moment from 1978 in Mildura that led to a book burning by the Mildura Shire Council. A very significant time that I was had a key role in, or accidentally found myself in a key role. There's a large banner that was shown outside the National Gallery of Victoria in 2005 in response to the NGV's then policy of not allowing anybody to make notes or to draw inside the gallery. I had heard at that stage I was I was a student in media arts at RMIT for a couple of years, and I was hearing students coming back from NGV projects and so forth, study projects, saying that they weren't allowed to draw, and in fact to the extreme that some told me they were stopped by the security from copying notes off wall texts because the wall texts were considered copyright. And I thought this was madness. And then it happened to me. One afternoon I was in the James Gleeson exhibition and there was no one else in the entire room, and a guard came up and asked me to stop. So I knew what this was about and said, no, I'm not going to stop. I wasn't even drawing anything by James Gleeson. I was drawing an architectural detail of the room. As she went and got another guard, and I desisted. Oh, well, I resisted rather, and that person got a third level of security, and I was ushered out of the gallery. I then contacted a few friends, and we decided to make a protest. At that time, there was an exhibition by Edvard Munch on, and there was advertising to do with the Scream and so forth. So that was very easy for us to use that. So we made masks of the Scream, and we all wore those as we held this banner outside the National Gallery of Victoria. And we did that in the morning, and in the afternoon we had advertised something which the press had picked up and further assisted with us. So we had, using a term like sit-in, which really began in the 60s, we had a sketch-in where everyone was invited to come along to the Munch exhibition carrying on their person a writing device such as a pencil or a pen and a piece of paper, and a huge number of people paid the admission price and came inside, and everyone was walking around doing little sketches. And the day before, the National Gallery trustees had had an emergency meeting and had decided to change the rules to allow sketching, and we were asked, would we now call the protest off? And we said, no, we'll keep it on. We'll call it a celebration. And within a year, the National Gallery of Victoria was advertising and promoting the fact that sketching was to be encouraged. So that was a very successful protest. I've had a long interest in Buddhist thinking and practices for many years. So another piece in that room is something was a painting I made from a fundraiser, and I'm necessarily concerned at the fate and position of Tibet in relation to China. How is Tibet to be free is the question, and my answer, which I... one of the date on it includes Millennium Eve. So in the year 2000, at Millennium Eve, I was actually on a Buddhist retreat, and thinking about Tibet, and it occurred to me that the way to free Tibet was to free China, not to regard China as an enemy, but as compassionate others who, as we all wish for their freedoms. So we have one of my ideogram paintings, and above and below is the text, Free China, Free Tibet. And then there's a generalised sign of protest, and a painting of a hand holding a placard that says unfair. And the dedication on that is to Martin Luther King, who has always been a hero of mine and of millions of others. So what it's also saying is that the works in that room, anyone even unfamiliar with my work but who comes to the exhibition will see, they continue on, and they appear to have the same content and be done with the same craft, application, etc., as the so-called artworks. So I'm not differentiating between protest works and non-protest works. In some ways, the works that are throughout the exhibition are a protest against, particularly because everything hangs on strings and makes a point of that, it's a protest against the idea of the isolated object or the isolated viewer. So it is the strings and the promotion of the idea of interconnectedness is a protest against the idea of us being socially isolated individuals. And also within a year, I remember on the internet, NGV site, seeing a banner across the top with senior citizens all sitting there on chairs, all sketching, and I thought, oh, this is this is wonderful and so strange, and oh, what have we done? but the kind of madness that wall labels, which are meant to be consumed through the eyes and head, but not on a piece of paper. When it gets to that stage, you think, okay, maybe we've gone to the limit of this. Very weird. But it was such a celebratory time that Friday, because we'd been contacted the day before. I remember a fax coming through. It was still the time of faxes, from Gerard Vaughan, the director, and saying, no, we're going to. And it was with Christian Capurro, who's photographing that show. So it was Christian and I who were the two that did all the organisation. And included in those who came along and held the banner was Helen Maudsley, an important artist, senior artist, the wife of John Brack. And this had happened to her as well. Someone who had donated works of John Brack and who had her own works in the collection had been asked to desist. So it was just wonderful to have senior generation and on the sketching day, there were a number of senior artists who came along. And I can remember at that stage there were three directors. There was Gerard Vaughan, who was the overall director, Tony Elwood, who's the present director, and Francis Lindsay. And one by one, each of the three came up, and kind of we made our we renewed our relationships, and it was a strange day, but it was there was a great sense of celebration. But, I designed a little logo of a pencil with a tick over it, as opposed to a pencil with a cross over it, vetoing it. And we had, so those of us who held the banner all had these T-shirts of the red and white cross, as it were, but was in fact an affirmation. And we called ourselves FPM, the Free Pencil Movement. And that, of course, is just a humorous take on all sorts of previous other liberation movements that we knew the idea of. But also, it's the whole history of the right to write and to draw. And also anyone who's travelled to Europe and been to the Louvre and a few other places has seen people with oil paints and easels set up and... So anyone with that background. But just on the use of the pen, you know, the pen is mightier than the sword, or that sort of thing. I mentioned Martin Luther King before. Another of my heroes is the Englishman William Tyndale. And he was the one, he introduced the second most neologisms, new words, into our culture, second only to Shakespeare. And so he was a gift of language to the people, and he was concerned at the time that everybody should have access to the Word of God, that is to the Bible. At that stage, the Bible was written in languages that only the educated elite had. So he was the one who translated the Bible into English, and for this he had to flee the country. He was tracked down in Antwerp. There was a trial. He was burnt at the stake, and just before, in public, and just before he died, he said, "Lord, open the eyes of the king," which is an astonishing act of generosity. And a year later, the king forgave him. In 1978 was the seventh Mildura sculpture triennial, so they'd been held every 3 years leading up to that point. The director of the Mildura Art Gallery was Tom McCullough. By the time the artists arrived, and they would arrive en masse from Sydney, from Melbourne, from Adelaide, those three places in particular, as well as other places in Australia, and also a large contingent from New Zealand. So it really was kind of a gathering of the tribes in an unusual and, as it were, neutral territory. But in 1978, it it wasn't so neutral because a number of councillors had, in advance of the arrival, spoken to the press and warned artists against, I think it was bloodletting, matters of sexual content. There were a number of things that they were, as it were, censoring in advance, and artists are not the sort of people you want to do that to because you invariably get response. So quite quickly, as the artists gathered in the week or so leading up to the opening, there were meetings held at which several of the councillors come along and restated their position and so forth. Within a week or so of the opening of the exhibition, most artists went back home, but at that time I had my work in that was a performance piece. It could be described various ways, but it was like a sideshow shooting gallery, and it was actually called a shooting gallery, where I was dressed in the manner of the sort of person who was often there at a sideshow, which might be a rocker 10 years later, out of date and so forth. I met many people, talked to them. Over 1,000 people fired the gun that I had inside the gallery, all of that. The councillors came by one day and all sort of checked everything out, scrutinised whether their vetoes had been abused and so forth. But they continued this kind of antagonistic position. And so one of them one day in an article referred to his cultural dollar. He wanted his cultural dollar spent appropriately. So I asked council permission to seek a general public response to this. And I made a questionnaire which asked people, what do you think the councillor means when he refers to his cultural dollar? I don't have this in front of me at the moment, so I can't remember the precise wording, but it was coming back at them in the same way as they had come at us. And there was an image of the 1950s family and looking at the ideogram, and there was a big dollar sign to one side and a question to the other. A week later, the next council meeting was held, and I went to that in my three-piece suit, looking with a tie and everything, looking very formal, with my poor, devoted partner dragged along with me again. And we sat in the public gallery, just metres away from the councillors, and I had pinned to my three-piece suit any number of clippings from the newspapers that had headlines about the councillors themselves. So formally, they were there having to address through the chair, and we were sitting within metres. One of the lead antagonist councillors, I immediately saw when I walked in, had just one thing in front of him, and that was my questionnaire. And at one stage, speaking through the chair and then turning to us, said, "It's probably our fault as well, because when you lie down with dogs, you can get fleas." Later, they went in camera, so our presence was formally acknowledged. We were thanked for coming along, and we left with the one other person in the room, who was the journalist. And he said, "You're always good for news now." And a few days later, we saw there was he'd written an article, and the banner outside the local newspapers read, "Verbal blast for artist." So he was spinning off me as the shooting gallery attendant. And so we've actually got that that newspaper banner in the exhibition. A little time after that, the director, Tom McCullough, after the 8 or 10 weeks of the sculpture triennial, he wrote a long report because it had all been controversial and there was a lot of information, but also he wanted to have a document that recorded the works that the artists had made. The council didn't like that document. They seized every copy they could find and it was burnt in the Mildura council incinerators. So that's actually a rare event of a book burning, a cultural book burning in Australia. Shortly after that, I heard that the Australia Council was going to discuss the matter, and also heard that there was, they were kind of, I never knew exactly, but they weren't going to follow it up. There weren't any legal cases, etc. And that information arrived much at, just before the next Sydney Biennale. So I went along and again protested at that as people were arriving at for the opening of the Sydney Biennale. I was standing right beside the door with another newspaper banner, which I'd written myself. Headed Art News, Artist. Oh, and I've forgotten, what is it? Artists. Anyway, that banner is also in the show, and it was saying, you know, artists are unhappy about the book burning. And I wore a mask of an open book that was largely burnt with eye holes through it. And I had a T-shirt that, if I remember rightly, said Burn Baby Burn. It was from Redhead Matches, something like that. And at the same time, there was an important German artist, Klaus Rinker, who Tom McCullough had brought to Australia to the sculpture triennial. And he was there at the time of these, at the time I sat in the council chambers, and he was also angry about what had happened, and he had one of the few, if not the only copy, and so he changed his work in the Biennale and exhibited copies of the otherwise burnt catalogue. So I wasn't alone in that, but the reaction wasn't as strong by cultural authorities as we feel it should have been. The questionnaire is in the exhibition, the two banner headlines are in it, and also the banner that was used in the, as part of the presentation in the, as it were, the city square in Mildura. They're all in the show. A Mildura resident, Sam Burke, is preparing a documentary on this, and she has a residency at the La Trobe Library, and has interviewed me. I know she's interviewed Tom, and I would say she would be looking back through all existing files from that period. So, and I know the ABC is supporting that documentary, so that's something I'm looking forward to, yeah.